T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
It's 8 o'clock.
It's time for more 92.9 The Game tonight.
Let's keep it going now.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in. Hour number two, 92.9 The Game tonight. Abe Gordon here live from the Kia Studios. Trying to scarf down what I can of the box of matzah I brought here. Not a food you can eat quickly and cleanly, and it doesn't fill you up much. So we got 7 days to perfect the meal plan performances during Passover here. We got only a couple days, though, until, man, it's a bummer, like, for draft night. There's no wings and pizza. It's matzah pizza. That is kind of a little bummer. I do make a mean matzah pizza, though. So there you go. Let's go back out to the WadeFord.com hotline. We continue our trip around the NFC South. Bring in our good buddy, Will Pelagic, WFNZ. You know Willie P from his time here, but also voice of Charlotte FC and kind of a multimedia journalist, if you will, there in the Carolinas. So, Willie P, how you doing, brother?
I'm good, brother. Happy and blessed Passover to you, sir.
It is, we're working our way there. We're, like I said, we're still perfecting the matzo pizza, but by Thursday night, we'll be good to go. So,
word.
You know, we're taking our trip around the NFC South. We want to kind of preview what's going on in the NFL draft. And quite frankly, for Carolina, the answer is nothing. You obviously gave up your first-round pick this year. And so I guess I'll start here. And we're going to largely discuss the entirety of the offseason as well. But with no first-round pick, how does this team find players that can provide some immediate production?
It's an exercise in delayed gratification, Abe. Fact is, the Panthers, at least from the outside looking in, we believe they're going to sit out the first night of the draft. I know that Dan Morgan had said to folks here locally that he's planning on being open-minded about things. You know, they can do any number of things with 33 and 39, whether it's trade back into the first round or trade behind 33 and get themselves another pick down the road. But more than likely, they're going to be kind of stuck there, not entering the draft until Friday at the very earliest. And when you think about it, they also could potentially, like I said before, package one of those picks to try and get some more. It's very interesting to see how they'll go about doing things, because they do have a couple of spots that they need to add in, obviously. The wide receiver position is obviously the most clear-cut when it comes to where their needs are and where they are in the draft. There's the notion that maybe they take two wide receivers at 33 and 39. I don't think that's something that they're going to look at. I do feel like if they want to use one of those two picks on something other than wide receiver, they might be best suited to try and do that with their first of the two first-round picks, potentially go in the neighborhood of trying to get, you know, one of those centers to try and help the center of the future, because right now their center is converted guard Austin Corbett, and that's not necessarily a sure thing right now. Maybe they get the center of the future or somebody who can be the heir apparent at that position, or potentially go and get somebody on the defensive side, because as you know, they lost a lot on that defense from the edge rusher position, and also they could also use some depth at corner as well. So there are still some holes, and it might take more than this offseason to try and fill them, but I like the job that the new general manager, Dan Morgan, and the folks around him, Brant Tillis as well, have done to try and replenish a roster that I think we found out pretty quickly was not just a quarterback away from contending in the NFC South.
It's Will Pelagic, WFNZ in Charlotte, joining us on the wait4.com hotline. Going to talk about some of the decisions to move away with some of the defensive stars in a moment. But on offense, you do have Bryce Young. But the potentially bigger addition there is head coach Dave Canales. What are you hoping a guy that kind of resurrected Geno Smith's career, got Baker Mayfield back on track, can maybe do for a young quarterback who had a really rough go of it in his rookie season?
Well, the biggest problem with the regime that came in to Bryce Young's purview the first season he was here was that they tried to adapt him to the offense that Frank Reich and Thomas Brown wanted, whereas Dave Canales has come in and said, look, we want to mold our offense around what Bryce does well. And that's something that is a breath of fresh air to a lot of Panther fans, and I think the modus operandi that should have happened all along. The fact of the matter is the Panthers didn't do two things very, very well. They didn't protect Bryce Young, and they did not have separation from the wide receiver aspect. They go out and get a guy like Deontay Johnson, who, if you think about separation, that's his game, and that's somebody who they were told this week, and he was told in his comments to the media earlier today that he has been told he's going to be the X wide receiver. He's going to be the number one target on a lot of plays, and it's something that the Panthers were devoid of all of last year, which was a true number one. The closest thing they had to number one was Adam Thielen, and if Adam Thielen is your number one, you got big problems. And so when you think about the Panthers going into year two under Bryce Young, they're going to be a lot more equipped to try and make things happen. I mentioned the pass protection. They fortified that offensive line with Robert Hunt and obviously a couple of other pieces across that line. I mentioned the fact that they're going to move Austin Corbett over to center. Potentially could be some other pieces in the mix as well, but I honestly think right now, when you look at the Panthers from an offensive standpoint, the two things they have to do is get the ball out of Bryce Young's hands quickly, and they also have to run the football a heck of a lot better. We all know that a best friend of a running game, or best friend of a young quarterback, is a good running game, and they just did not run it to the level that they did a couple of years ago when they were rounding and pounding and getting themselves within a game of the playoffs under interim head coach Steve Wilks.
Is there still belief that Bryce Young can be and look, we don't necessarily have to compare him to C.J. Stroud or any of that. Is there still belief that he can be a serviceable starter in the NFL, or after 1 year, is that just completely gone?
I think there's definitely some belief there, and I don't think they would be sticking with him if they didn't think he could do that, because, you know, it'd be very easy for the Panthers to, you know, punt on this year and, you know, try and get what you can out of Bryce Young and maybe, you know, try and go for a quarterback next year. But they at least are of the opinion that this is still a guy who can be, you know, on the marquee and a marquee name for them. And their contention is that they just didn't protect him well enough. They didn't surround him well enough with the pieces that they had. You know, the terrible fallacy about the quarterback in this year, Abe, is in this day and age, I should say, is that everyone thinks that if you're a 1-1 guy, then you automatically have to be Patrick Mahomes. And he's probably one of the few guys, if not the only guy, that can really elevate his position based on his own talent without, you know, elevated guys at the wide receiver position or the offensive line. There were years where Mahomes had a subpar offensive line, though, and they didn't go far. And there are years where he hasn't had good wide receivers, and he's had to bring the most out of them. Well, when you think about the other quarterbacks who have come through in this day and age, they need help. And I think one of the things you talk about C.J. Stroud, one of the things we underrated is how ready that team around him was to be able to compete, and also how weak that division was. I think, you know, Tank Dell is somebody who many people didn't have him on their radar. Well, he came out and he was an absolute stud for them last year. A couple of the other pieces and skill position guys around him have also kind of flourished under Stroud's tutelage. And when you think about Houston, they just were very, very much more adept, especially in the offensive line, to be able to protect C.J. Stroud and help him out, whereas the Panthers overrated their offensive weapons and overrated their offensive line. The scheme with the line, I think, was more of the problem with the Panthers, is that they had a scheme that was more fit to run what Steve Wilks and that regime were running at the end of two seasons ago, whereas they basically had a miscast of characters with what Frank Reich and Thomas Brown wanted to do. They had to retool what they wanted out of that position and those positions in order to try and make sure what they wanted to get out of Bryce Young was what they got, but they didn't. And so now they had to go back to square one, which is kind of what they've done this year under not only Dave Canales, but also Dan Morgan and the rest of the front office staff.
It is Will Pelagic, WFNZ in Charlotte, joining us chatting about what the Panthers are planning to do in the NFL draft. And look, at the moment, it does appear that they will be sitting out of Thursday's first round. But you did mention there, Willie P., the two picks towards the top end of the second round. Let's suggest that they do package both of those picks to move into the back of the first round. If they're doing that, who is it for, or if you don't have a specific guy, a position group at least, would they be doing that to move back into the first round for?
They'd be doing that for a wide receiver, definitely. I think that the only way you make that move is if you feel like you can get somebody like a Xavier Worthy or somebody on that level, or if they feel like if there's a run on wide receivers that goes early and they feel like they're going to miss out on the tier that they feel like would fall to them, then maybe you go in that route. But I still think that they intend to make those two picks because the last thing they want to be doing is shedding draft capital after they did so to a great deal last year. I think if they are going to make any kind of move, it'd be a move back from 33, maybe a couple of spots, and then potentially get something in the third or fourth round alongside what they already have. Because I think so much about this draft for them is about volume. I mean, you want to get quality. There's no question about it. But they believe, and I think this is true, that the receiver disparity between 33 and 39 is going to be kind of negligible. I think all those guys have, you know, project grades around them, and they have certain things that they do well, but other things they don't do well. They each kind of have a knock against them, whether you talk about Xavier Leggett or Keon Coleman or Ladd McConkey, you know, guys of that nature. I think they're all kind of in that same projection. They're obviously all different receivers and have different skill sets, and that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that from the top-end productivity standpoint, they believe that they're going to get basically an equal amount out of each of those guys. And if they're all available after day one, I think that they're feeling all right and maybe going back a couple of spots and getting another pick. I don't think they go up and get somebody in the first round unless they feel like the run of wide receivers is going to come a lot sooner than they originally forecast.
The final question about the Panthers here, Will, and that is myself and a lot of people kind of felt that the Panthers were set to build around a young defense and were really struggling to figure it out on offense. And they've kind of taken that arguing point away from us when they decided to trade Brian Burns. So what went into the decision there to part with a couple of defensive starters, but most notably Brian Burns?
Well, the two big ones they parted with were Burns and Luvu. And the biggest problem that surrounded Brian Burns is that not necessarily anything that had a fault of his, but the opposite side of him really didn't have the kind of strength that allowed him to be placed on single coverage. Like, he was always the red pen circle guy on the defense when an opposing offense was putting forth their game plan. It was easy to double team him. There were years where he was pretty poor against the run. That had improved in recent years, so that's not something you can necessarily use against him. But it honestly came down to the fact that the amount of money that he was going to be making based on what the Panthers wanted to do with their team, I don't want to say it was a luxury to have a pass rusher of that particular ilk, but they felt like they could better use that money to protect their most viable asset for the future, and that was Bryce Young. They felt like they could go, you know, 2-14 or 2-15 or whatever, with or without Brian Burns, because and you know this very well, Abe, the quarterback position is the one that most affects winning. And if the Panthers are going to try and get anything out of Bryce Young, they needed to at least take their biggest swing to try and make sure that they could help him. They felt like paying Brian Burns that money would severely handicap helping him directly on the offense. That's why they spent big money with two offensive linemen. That's why they made the deal to get Deontay Johnson. And they also tried to replenish what they could on defense as well. They brought in DJ Wonnum, who's a young prospect out of South Carolina. They brought in Jadeveon Clowney. Honestly, I feel like even though those two players are playing on a diminished level than what Brian Burns' high-end output would be, They're a lot more balanced at pass rusher. You add in Kalavon Chaisson as well, who could potentially, you know, be a buy low pick for the Panthers or a buy low acquisition for the Panthers. Those three guys together could potentially bring out a more balanced pass rush unit than what they had at any point under Burns, because the position on the opposite side of him, aside from the year when they had Haason Reddick, really wasn't being serviced correctly. Is it a finished product by any means? No. The Frankie Louvu loss very much hurts, because a lot of ways he was a heart and soul pick of that defense, but according to what we heard, he had kind of already had his mind made up when the Panthers finally circled around and actually tried to renegotiate with him. He had his mind made up that he wanted to go join former Falcon head coach Dan Quinn in Washington, so they've been happy trails to him. There's still a potential that they can go and potentially acquire another corner and Stephon Gilmore, getting him back from when he was here a couple of years ago. I don't know, again, if it's a completely finished product on that side of the football. They might need to add another linebacker in the draft or potentially next offseason, but under Ogiro Vero, the thing that they were known most for a year ago, he was made known for basically making chicken salad of the chicken you-know-what. He had guys like DiCaprio Boodle playing cornerback for them last year with all the defections they had on the defensive side of the football, and they were doing a serviceable job having playing out there for 40 minutes per contest. So I don't think they're worried about that side of the football, despite losing Brian Burns and Frankie Louvu and a couple of others. But there's obviously more work to be done this offseason, potentially next year as well, to try and make that unit back into what they think it could really be top end.
Will, I got literally 20 seconds. If you were drafting for the Atlanta Falcons, who would you take at number 8?
Ooh, that's difficult. I'd have to figure out whether or not one of those quarterbacks is there, obviously, because, you know, I know Kirk Cousins is the quarterback of the now, but, you know, that's not necessarily something that's a long term. I wouldn't mind maybe trying to buy high on that, but obviously, it could be another situation where you go back on defense, try to replenish that side of the football as well. I think they're one of the few teams in that top 10 that's got a lot of options, and they might be able to wait for what is basically considered BPA, best player available. I hate to hedge, but like you said, I think there's a lot of variations as to what they can do.
Will, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us here tonight, and enjoy the draft this weekend.
Thank you, Abe. Appreciate you.
There you go, Will Pelagic, WFNZ in Charlotte, also the voice of Charlotte FC. I was going to ask him a couple soccer questions, but kind of ran out of time because we continue to visit the NFC South. Go to New Orleans this time. Luke Johnson going to join me, New Orleans Times Picayune Saints beat reporter. That's coming up next. It is 92.9 The Game tonight on Sports Radio. 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Download it today.
Let's go get it, baby. Let's go do it. Come on.
Sports doesn't stop at night, and neither do we.
Let's get the show going, man.
This is 92.9 The Game tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in, 92.9 The Game tonight. Abe Gordon here live, Kia Studios, and on the Odyssey app as well. Gonna wrap up our tour around the NFC South as Luke Johnson joins us, New Orleans Times, Picayune Saints beat reporter. He's on the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta Ford dealer, chatting about what we expect to see on Thursday night from each of the teams. And obviously, like we just mentioned, Carolina might not be involved Thursday, but certainly Friday and Saturday they'll look to make their mark. But the New Orleans Saints are not far behind the Atlanta Falcons, the 14th overall pick. So, first of all, Luke, good evening to you. And then secondly, what are some of the names and options being discussed at 14 for the Saints?
Well, I think for the Saints, they feel very fortunate. This is a draft where there's a lot of tackles who are expected to go in the first round. They have an extremely pressing need there. Yeah, their first-round pick from 2 years ago, Trevor Penning, he was benched early in last season and basically was just left on the sideline, wasn't even used in their jumbo formations. They just kind of wanted to let him just kind of get through the year and try to figure out what was wrong in the offseason. And then the right tackle, Ryan Ramczyk, who's been a very good pro for them for a long time, has a degenerative knee issue. And, you know, it's like after the season, they were like, man, we hope he's going to be okay. And then we hear the combine, they're optimistic. And then like 2 weeks later, you know, or 3 weeks later, whatever it was at the owners meetings, all of a sudden the prognosis is pretty doom and gloom again. And there's concern that he might not ever play again. So they might have gaping holes at both of their tackle positions, which is not really a spot you want to be in when you're breaking a new offense with a quarterback who's got to kind of prove his value here. So I think when you're looking at them, you're looking tackle. Just kind of depends on who's going to be there. But the guy I keep coming back to is Olufashinu, the Penn State offensive tackle. It kind of varies depending on which service you're looking at, where people kind of rank him among this group. But if he's there at number 14, I just have a really hard time seeing the Saints pass him up. He's just got everything that they traditionally covet and value in an offensive lineman. And I think they'd be absolutely thrilled if he's there.
Yeah, once you went with the offensive tackle, I was like, man, I bet they want Fashanu. There's no denying that. We see the same things from him. Obviously not a massive need here in Atlanta, but there's no denying the prospect that Fashanu seems to be. So, Luke, when I look at this team, I'm trying to figure out exactly where the Saints are in terms of momentum. Are you viewing this team as one that can compete for the division? Are we trying to rebuild? Like, exactly where is this franchise right now?
Well, that's a really good question, man. I think the Saints view themselves as a team that they still believe they can compete with this roster that they have right now. But I think it's getting harder and harder to see that. They're also at a point where they're finally starting to kind of take their medicine a little bit with where they're at with the salary cap, to try to not be in a position where they got to clear $80 million every year. We saw them take a couple contracts that they would have normally touched in past years and not decide to restructure them, contracts like Alvin Kamara's and Taysom Hill's. We haven't seen them really get very active in the free agent market. And the only guy who they signed who were really expecting to be a regular contributors, Chase Young. And the only reason they're able to sign him is because he's got a neck injury that'll keep him out of part of training camp. So it's really hard to peg where they're going to be. Yeah. I think there's reason to be a little bit excited because they're finally breaking in a new offense, or they're finally going to be coming into this modern age of NFL football. I think Clint Kubiak with some of the pieces they have could be really fun, but their defense is aging. It's taken a step back each of the last couple of years. Guys who they're paying a lot of money, Cam Jordan, didn't produce at a level that we're used to seeing from him. It's kind of hard to say right now if you look at it right now, they're probably third in the pecking order in the NFC South. And this is a team that expects to compete. You know, it's a weird situation they're in.
It is the voice of Luke Johnson, New Orleans Times Picayune Saint beat reporter, also long distance runner. We may touch on that in just a moment. I know this is kind of a goofy question, but maybe it's just me. I actually feel there's some legitimacy to it. Would Jameis Winston have been back if he didn't get Jamal Williams that touchdown week 18 last year?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think that, look, I mean, that probably that
final nail in the coffin.
I think both parties knew that they were going for, you know, in different directions at that point. And that was just like, okay, well, and now you're definitely gone. I think he was still really respected in the locker room here. People loved him around here, but Jameis was never going to see the field here. And you know, it's not like he's got a lot of opportunities elsewhere. You got to remember that he came here, he signed a number of short-term deals here. So he's had his opportunities to sign other places and get a starting job other places, but the demand wasn't there for him. And you know, last year the Saints used a fourth round pick on Jake Haener, who they like a lot. And you know, I think that they were just preparing themselves at that point to just ride with Derek Carr. And yeah, this is a little bit of a different spot for them than they have been in. They've always had a quarterback like Jameis Winston, like Teddy Bridgewater, like Andy Dalton, you know, who's been able to step in and play like starting caliber football in case the starter got injured. They still have Taysom Hill here, who's played some pretty good ball as a starter, but yeah, they're kind of going in a new direction with their, you know, their philosophy there. But yeah, I don't think that played a huge factor in.
That's unfortunate, because I really like that storyline a lot better than like the real answer of like, it was just time to part ways.
But look, when it happened, and we got the explanation afterwards, I can guarantee you all of us beat writers looked at him and were like, he's gone. No chance. There's no chance he's coming back after that.
Yeah, there you go. Luke Johnson, New Orleans Saints beat writer, joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline. I kind of asked this question a little bit differently to a previous guest previewing what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had done this offseason and the expectations there. But Dennis Allen, what is his status? Is he entering this year on the hot seat? What do you view as what they need to get this year for him to remain as the head coach?
I think if you look around the NFL and you look at the way all the other teams operate, you'd have to look at Dennis Allen and say, yes, he's 100% on the hot seat. It feels hard to say that here, because this is absolutely an organization that values and prioritizes stability and you know, kind of a long leash and trust. I think, you know, a lot of us were thinking he was on the hot seat last year before they had the kind of hot finish to end the year. They went 4-1 in their last five. That kind of eliminated those questions from really being valid. But look, you know, 7-10 and 9-8 with a roster that won 50 games in the 4 years prior to him being there. You know, I think it's a valid question. Like, he's got to win this year. He's got to get him back in the postseason. I think, you know, they can love stability all they want. You know, Mickey Loomis has been here since 2002. All of his head honchos up in the front office with him have been here since, you know, 15 or 16, some longer. Kai Harley's been here for a long, long time, their cap guy. But, you know, it's a results business. And, you know, this is he's got his quarterback. You know, he's got his coaching staff now, his offensive coaching staff. Like, he's got to get it done this year. And I think he would agree with that. You know, three years is a good enough window here. With the amount of talent they had on the team while he's been here. So yeah, I would say yes. I would say it's got to happen. But yeah, you know, this is, again, he could go 8-9 this year, and the Saints would say he's, you know, we're bringing him back for another year. It wouldn't totally surprise me.
Chatting about the offseason the New Orleans Saints have had with Luke Johnson. I do want to ask you about your opinions on the Falcons in just a moment, but how much added pressure is on the front office there in New Orleans to not miss on these first and second round picks without having that third or fourth rounder that you could potentially hit gold on?
Look, I think there's just pressure on them regardless, even if they had those original picks, because while they've had some pretty decent drafts over the last several years, not including that 17 class, which you know, like, no team ever hits on a class like that. That was a one in a million. They've gotten some good players, but like they've taken these like big home run swings on players in the first round, guys with traits who they're trying to project, and like none of them have worked out. You know, Marcus Davenport was often injured and never lived up to his potential here, and he never even signed a big deal when he left. Trevor Penning's been, you know, at this point a bust. I think they still believe he can be much better than he has been, but you know, you traded The reason they don't have a second round pick in 2024 is because they traded to the Eagles in 2022 to get Trevor Penning. And they traded their 2023 first, which the Eagles then used to draft Jalen Carter, you know, a player who's had a better rookie season than the defensive tackle the Saints ended up drafting at 30. So, like, they've taken lots of guys like this. Peyton Turner, a defensive end out of Houston, who, you know, small school, big traits, not a bunch of production. The Saints thought they could get a lot out of him, and he's just been hurt the whole time. So, yeah, they've got to get impact guys with those high picks, because we're seeing what happens now when you don't get that. You know, they have a massive hole to tackle because their tackle didn't work out. You know, they had to go spend $13 million on a pass rusher who's been injured most of his career in Chase Young, because their first round picks at defensive end hasn't worked out. Their second round pick last year, Isaiah Foskey, had barely got on the field. So they've been decent in the middle and late rounds, but like they've taken these like big risks in the first round that just haven't panned out. Like the analogy I keep using is they need to try to hit a double. They keep doing these home run swings. They just need to poke one down the line and play it safe a little bit here.
And then final question for you, Luke, if you were the Atlanta Falcons front office with the 8th overall pick, what would you be looking to do there?
Well, I feel like, you know, we've been talking about the Falcons' lack of pass rush for years. I'd say it's not a surprise, but every time I open up a mock draft, I see Dallas Turner there. But, you know, we were talking on a podcast today just about, you know, my colleague, we did a mock draft, and my colleague picked Rome Odunze to the Falcons. I was just like, man, like another top 10 pick on offense for Atlanta, but like how sick would that be? Like how do you match up with that team if you got Odunze and Drake London and Bijan Robinson and Kirk Cousins pulling the trigger and a pretty good offensive line working for that? I mean, you know, with a new offensive coordinator calling the plays. I mean, I think that would be fun. It'd be fun to cover those types of games. But yeah, I still think that I feel like they got to go. They got to beef up that pass rush. Like this is an offense heavy draft, but if you can get one of the few defensive impact playmakers in the top 10, I think that's probably the smartest move.
Luke Johnson, unfortunately, we're out of time. I did want to ask you about a 16-year delay between your first and second marathons. It's going to have to wait until next time, but certainly congratulations on that finish there in Utah. And thanks for breaking down the NFL draft with us.
My pleasure. We'll talk to you all soon.
There you go. Luke Johnson telling us what's going on in New Orleans. Interesting to hear what he had to say about where that team is, kind of how the fans view it, where the front office and coaching staff. I don't view them as contenders for the NFC South. For me, this is a two-team division. It's the Saints or the Bucks, the Falcons or the Bucks. One of those two teams is going to win this division. The other one's potentially going to sneak in as a wild card. We'll have to see how that plays out when we get to the season. But you heard it earlier. Tom Krasnicki in Tampa said whichever team has the better draft might actually end up as the division champ. It might come down to those sorts of minuscule differences. All right. When we get back, we will get you an update on what's going on at Truist, the Atlanta Braves handling business. Once again, we'll tell you who did the damage and how it happened on the other side. Also, the PM Power Rankings coming your way on Sports Radio. 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's hiding somewhere in the darkness waiting for nightfall.
It's live sports talk in the ATL at night. This is 92.9 The Game tonight.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in to 92.9 The Game tonight. Abe Gordon here, taking you all the way to 10 o'clock. We're going to talk a lot about the NBA when we go outside the perimeter, start the 9 o'clock hour. Also, I do have some more comments and another discussion about the NFL draft. And at the end of the day, the moral of the story, the bottom line, what do the Falcons actually need to accomplish in the NFL draft? We'll discuss that at 9:20 p.m. Power Rankings in just a moment. But wanted to provide a Braves update because you got a couple things working right now. One of those is that we have confirmed the reappearance of Maximum Fried. Ladies and gentlemen, he's back. And it may have taken a bum Marlins lineup to do that, but he is rolling through it. Got 5 strikeouts and 6 innings pitched. He's on the mound right now in the 7th. So he's working through it. A very low pitch count. I don't know. Like, we'll keep an eye on it. I don't think it's overly far-fetched to say right now this could be a complete game. We'll see what sort of trouble he works into in the later innings here as he tries to get through this lineup a third time. But he has looked very strong. And I say that he gives up a single. Look at me go. He is staked to a 5-run lead right now. Of course, he's holding the shutout so far. But you've got Michael Harris with an RBI double. You got David Fletcher at the bottom of the order with a sack fly. Travis d'Arnaud stays hot. He's got a sack fly. Also had a ground rule double, which I thought was a homer. And then Adam Duvall with a 2-run job. And so the Braves are up 5-0. You're in the 7th inning. It looks like they're going to be able to find their way towards another series victory, potentially play for the sweep tomorrow. And more importantly, because I think they'll handle business the rest of the way in the last 3 innings. More importantly, Max Fried looks like what we need him to look like. And it's good to see. I know a lot of people kind of, even after his 3rd start, which was really good, a lot of people were like, I don't know, that 4th start, though, he gave up some runs, gave up some hits. He's back at it. I didn't have a problem with it. You know, I'm not expecting him to go 8 scoreless every time out. So I think the Braves ended up winning that game. I'm trying to remember. It all blends together. The weeks go by. This baseball season's so long. It's tough to, like, in his 4th start and then in his 5th start. And then you remember, though, in his 6th start. We can't go through that way. So we'll keep an eye on Max Fried. We'll see what his pitch count ends up getting towards by the end of this 7th inning, assuming he does finish the 7th inning. And then we'll also discuss, the end of the game when we get there. But before we do that, as I always do, at 8:40 on 92.9 The Game tonight, let's go ahead and put them in order.
It's time for the PM Power Rankings on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, so a couple of interesting topics yesterday. I'm a little less enthused about the topics given me today. Oren Romain gave me a couple yesterday for today. We got Dom Cheroski here. He's going to discuss kind of what I've got going on with the list here, and then he'll provide the next additions topics at the end of this thing. But a reminder here for the PM Power Rankings, my sports topic was my top 5 favorite championship teams of all time. I was given the caveat only one of them could be local. And then my non-sports topic, and we'll start here, was the top 5 foods that are better homemade. And it's tough because I don't really cook or whatever. Whatever you want to call it, grill, you want to call it cook, you want to call it bake, like whatever terms you want to use, I'm probably not doing it. You know what I do? Preheat the oven. Throw it in the oven.
Yeah.
It's already made. It's frozen. Here we go. 18 minutes later at 375 after being flipped once, it's not frozen, and we're having dinner. So it kind of is difficult for me to really dive into the idea of homemade foods, but I kind of went with some generic. I went with some real problematic answers, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But we start out with number 5. Cookies and brownies. It just, there's something about the cookie off of a bake. And you don't look, I'm not talking about homemade. You don't even have to make the dough. You buy the dough, you ball it up, whatever you do. But it's just better. And it's almost better when it's not a perfect cookie.
Yeah.
You get like the hard crust on the outside, but the chewy chocolate middle.
Yeah.
It just stores can't do that. Restaurants can't figure that out.
Like it's because it is the
too perfect.
Exactly. So like they're trying all to make of their it like consistent.
The reason it happens because your oven probably doesn't heat properly. Right. If we're being and so like right. It's the improperness that actually makes it special. And then brownies too. Same thing. You got the edge. I like the edge pieces. Some people like the chewy gooey middle pieces. Do you, man? But like cookies and brownies are just better at home than they are. Also, I don't want it to be a perfect circle. I need to be like, who shaped this thing?
Yeah, exactly. Look I want it to be
this one ran together on the other edge. Yeah, all right, whatever. So cookie, number 4, give me grilled cheese. And I know, like, it's not like the most common restaurant order to go, but there's some places that have grilled cheese. I've been to places that Absolutely. Specialize in grilled
Very
cheese.
Grilled cheese, yeah.
The gourmet. They're never what I need. It's always limited. I want my amount of cheese. I want my type of cheese. I want my amount of cheese. I decide if I'm buttering the crust or the bread. If people has come big in recent years to use mayonnaise on the outside when put it in on the grill, whatever. Grilled cheese, it's better at home. I don't know why. Again, probably because you probably overburn char it a little bit.
Yeah.
And there's a couple burn
you
spots, and
it. That's
that. Number three is where Mike Conti lost his mind at me when I was talking about him. Number three, I stuck in the sandwich game. And, like, yeah, maybe you haven't ordered this at a restaurant since you were a kid. Whatever. Like, I don't know. Like, again, this was always going to be a tough list. Peanut butter and jelly. Peanut butter and jelly is better homemade than it is anywhere you can buy it. And that includes Crustables or whatever you want. Here's the thing. Everyone has their own ideal ratio of peanut butter to jelly, type of jelly. If you're doing like the lip of peanut butter to keep the jelly in the middle from sliding. Everyone has their own perfect thing, and you can only make it that way at home. You can't get it that way at a restaurant. And so that's why it's on the list. It's ultimately going to be better homemade because you get to personalize it way more than you can anywhere else.
I agree with that. I do kind of give a little pushback on the idea of
people ordering at anywhere else.
Yeah, because the only other option is like Uncrustables, which
I know the kids menu.
Yeah,
okay. Got a kids menu somewhere.
Someplace. Yeah, I'm sure. Know. Yeah.
Number two, and again, it's PM Power Rankings. Abe Gordon here on 92.9 The Game tonight. Top five fast foods that are not fast foods, just top five foods that are better homemade. Number two, mac and cheese. Mac and cheese. For every great side dish restaurant that you can give me, I'd be like, there's an ant that lives in my neighborhood.
Exactly.
That can put you to shame.
Yeah, I have yet to have mac and cheese from any other restaurant that I would prefer over my mother's.
Yeah, it's just, there's no, like, it's not like one person, like, it's almost like universally everyone's homemade mac and cheese. And look, I'm not like some mac and cheese snob. I'll eat darn near any mac and cheese you put together. Because, like, some people are like, you can't trust everyone's mac and cheese. I'm like, no. Yeah, you can. It's still good.
Yeah, no. I've seen
It's like pizza. It's like wings. No, but here's the thing. Do you know how bad you have to be to make mac and cheese I won't eat? That's the thing. Like, do you know how bad you have to be to make a pizza that I won't scarf down?
You won't try it, yeah.
Like, I've never been any place with bad wings. I've been places that have better wings than others, but, like, and I order 10 wings, I'll eat 10 wings. Like,
yeah, no,
not that big a deal. And then number one is French toast. I don't know what it is about store-made or restaurant-made French toast as opposed to at home. It feels too, like, letter of the law at restaurants. Like, it never feels that you can taste the eggs in the bread, right?
Okay.
And look, obviously, you know, everyone has their own version of French toast. In my family, we've always used a ton of egg wash.
Yep.
We used thick slices, challah bread. That's how we did it. My grandma made the world's best French toast. My mom tried. Not a great cook, but even that was pretty good. My sister does a good job with it, too.
Yeah.
There's something about the amount of egg in the bread that makes it better for me at home than if I were to go to a breakfast spot. That's all.
I agree with that. I think now there are some spots that do very good French toast.
Yeah, but the question is how much of that's actually like just good bread, or is it like, well, they have powdered sugar and fruit, and like that's not fair. Yeah, I don't have that. I'm going crazy. All right, top five championship teams of all time, and this is one where my list is going to incredibly be wildly different from everyone else's list, because it's my favorite teams and the teams that I rooted for, I pulled for, whatever. So number five for me, the 98 Bulls. It's whatever, any Bulls team from the start of it, either any single year from any of the three-peats. Like, go ahead. I mean, I grew up loving the Bulls, so there's that. Number four, The 2003-2004 Invincibles, that is Arsenal, did not drop a game that year. And I had just become, like, officially picked out my favorite team in London, like, 2 or 3 years earlier. Four or five. Like, I was, like, 98, 99, 2000. And so just a couple years into, like, really being a big Arsenal fan, they got that done. Number three, the 2006 Florida Gators football champion beat Ohio State 41-14 in the national championship game. This was Tim Tebow's freshman year. Percy Harvin's on that team. But Chris Leak is the quarterback, and then just a wild array of studs on defense, led by, among others, Brandon Spikes. So the 2021 Atlanta Braves, my one local choice in that realm. Just so many different things about the 2021 squad that I really enjoyed, appreciated, and really kind of like the unexpectedness of it. We were good. We kind of been in that discussion in previous years. We'd fallen short. You didn't have Acuna. You know, the past 2 years, I thought you were the best team in baseball. 2021, I didn't think you were the best team in baseball. Right. So to win it that year, considering how they'd done it, some of the moments, Matzik, and Jock Peterson, Jorge Soler, just all the things that went into that, I think that makes sense for the one local team. And then 2006-2007, Florida Gator basketball. This is their second championship. This is the repeat. You got Torian Green, Lee Humphrey, Corey Brewer, Al Horford, Joe Noah, and some of the big guys off the bench as well. That team was just an absolute joy for 2 years to watch. But I'll go with that as my number one championship in my.
Oh, yeah.
And they had to go up against Greg Oden in that championship game. And for everyone who, like, I know what Greg Oden's career turned into, but, like, you had two very high-level NBA big men in Al Horford still getting it done.
Yep.
I don't know if he's getting it done, but he's still playing. and Joe Noah, who was an incredibly good college player, even very good at the NBA level.
One of my favorite players.
Yeah, he did his thing a little different than everyone else, but very good player. And, I mean, Greg Oden gave them the business. I mean, that dude was legit. Obviously, it didn't work out due to the injuries and stuff like that. But one of the all-time what-ifs, because he was legitimately a wildly dominant player. And so it would have been nice to see what happened there. All right. We got to get our topics for next week.
Yes, sir.
So what do you got for me?
So you want your sports or non-sports one first?
Because of the order, write these in. Let's go sports.
Sports? All right. So this one, I like the idea of personalizing it, and it gives us a chance to know you a little bit better. So sports, I want to know the top five games you've attended. Top five games. Does not matter which sport. Can be professional or collegiate. Top five games you've actually attended and seen with your Aunt Maris.
Okay. Interesting. Been to a couple good ones. Used to cover a lot of college sports, so some Final Fours, Rose Bowl, Fiesta Bowl, Sugar Bowl, national title games, some interesting stuff we can get into.
Got some options.
Yeah.
All right.
Non-sports.
And non-sports. So being that you talked about how much you are just a preheat, throw it in there, keep it
baby.
Easy. I wanted you to give me, I figured you're someone who probably does do a lot of frozen pizzas type stuff.
Sure.
I wanted you to give me top five frozen pizza brands. Which ones are
the
your
brand?
Favorite? Yes.
Okay. I don't even know what I buy. That's the problem.
You don't
at
even
the
pay
time,
attention.
I know what the brands are.
Yeah, you got like Tombstone,
DiGiorno and Red Baron.
California and, Pizza Kitchen.
Yeah, see, that was going to be my sleeper. I was hoping you didn't say that. That was going to be one of my sleepers.
Whoops.
They get that Sicilian, man. You can get that, put that work in. All right, when we come back, we are going to continue the discussion. A lot of NBA discussion to be had. Max Fried back on the mound, baby. Getting it done, boys. Getting it done. He's out there to start the eighth inning. So we'll keep an eye on that. But a lot of NBA discussion when we head outside the perimeter. Final hour, 92.9 The Game tonight coming your way. Abe Gordon here. Live from the Kia Studios. Also got a very interesting Falcons discussion coming your way at 9:20. So we'll have some fun as we head towards the NFL draft just a couple days away now. That's what's up next. It is 92.9 The Game tonight on Sports Radio. 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.
T
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.